Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels' family of 22 brands has over 7,400 locations and the perfect hotel for any traveler you want to be. Like a Cambria Hotel, serving up locally inspired craft cocktails for all my folks who maybe want to meet up and talk about Mad Royals. Check into a Radisson Hotel with flexible workspaces for you strivers who listen during business travel. Or a Comfort Hotel with free hot breakfast, family-friendly pools, and big spacious rooms for the parents who listen with their kids and need a little retreat. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you when you book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true. What does every grocery store aisle now have in common? Products that come in paper packaging. And not just the obvious ones like cereal boxes and juice cartons. From beauty products to boxed water, there are more opportunities to go papertarian than ever before. So why should you? Because paper comes from a renewable resource and can be recycled up to 7 times. Simply put, it's the smart choice for the environment. And it turns out the easiest choice for you. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Candace Keener, joined by staff writer Jane McGrath.
Hey there.
Hey, Jane. Now, I really hope that you have a lot of time on your hands because I thought I would cover the entire history of the Ottoman Empire today.
Let me get some coffee.
I know. No, I'm just kidding. We're not going to do that. There are a couple of highlights we need to go over in order to put into context this crazy, crazy idea that Jane has written about, and that is, why were people actually vying to become slaves in the Ottoman Empire?
When I first heard the assignment, I had no idea, but it actually ended up being a really fascinating development that happened in the Ottoman Empire.
And it actually came from one of our podcast listeners.
That's right.
He wrote to us and he sort of challenged us to research this and answer the question, why? Why would anyone want to be a slave? It's just so ludicrous.
Yeah, and he was really helpful as well with the research.
He was. So yeah. Many, many thanks.
So it all dates back to the 14th century. And at this time, the Ottomans had this, they went by this Muslim law. I'm not sure of the pronunciation, so please excuse me. Ganimat. And this law stated that the Sultan could basically take 1/5 of the booty his soldiers collected in battle. And usually this has to do with, like, material goods, you know, that soldiers collected. But one ruler, Orhan, actually adapted this law to apply to people in addition to things. And so he started taking 1 out of 5 captured people that his soldiers took over, and he took them in sort of his slaves, but not just normal slaves. He made it sort of his personal army, and they became a very elite corps known as Janissaries.
That's right. So it seems like a remarkable idea, having slave soldiers essentially manufactured from the spoils of war. And this is not a concept that stuck just under this one sultan. His son actually followed the same principle. And Murad I actually wanted to increase the number of his troops. So he started going into conquered Christian territories and taking young boys between the ages of 8 and 18 and picking the very, very best ones to make this incredibly prestigious corps of soldiers that would serve the Sultan exclusively.
Yeah, and one important distinction that Murad had to deal with was the fact that he wasn't as acquiring as many lands as his dad did. Though, according strictly to Muslim law, at least from what I read, it was okay for Orhan to do what he was doing, but what his son was doing was a little bit more shady because he was going into lands that were previously conquered, not freshly conquered, and
right.
So these were maybe descendants of conquered people, and so they tried to rationalize what they were doing by saying it was okay, but even Muslims at this time argued against this practice of taking these boys.
And at this point, I think it might be helpful to know a little bit about the Ottoman Empire and its principles of expansion and how it maintained pockets of Christian people throughout what was ostensibly a Muslim empire. The Ottoman Empire actually lasted a remarkably long time, from 1301 to 1922. It didn't really crumble into pieces until after World War I and the Balkan Wars. And what's so interesting about the Ottoman Empire is that it sort of picked up where the Byzantine Empire left off. And when they conquered the Christians from the Byzantine Empire, they actually maintained the same capital city, only they changed the name. So instead of Constantinople, Istanbul became the seat of the Ottoman Empire.
So if you ever heard that song about the Istanbul and then Constantinople, you'll know that this is why, because different people would take over and rename it.
And according to some history books, when the Sultan rode into Constantinople to take it over, he came in on a white horse. It was sort of this crowning moment of Constantinople going by the wayside and Istanbul becoming established. And it was run by Muslim principles, religious principles, and military principles, and they were very rigid. But one of the codes actually dictated that they were to respect other religions, and it really behooved the Sultan to allow the Christians and the empire to continue practicing their religion. Because, first of all, there were so many of them that if he tried to get them to convert, it would resort to an awful uprising, and rather than oppress the people, he just decided to sort of live along with them.
Yeah, but this caused problems because he saw a dilemma. If he were to, when he wanted to boost his Janissary corps, he would have taken Muslim kids. Mm-hmm. But problem with that is that he reasoned that if they grew up, they would remain faithful to their family, and their family, their relatives, would just assume that they wouldn't have to pay taxes because they have these friends in high places. So the Sultan reasoned that if he took Christian boys instead and converted them to Islam, that they would grow to hate to their Christian families and the Christian religion in general, so that they would not have any loyalty to their old families, their old life, and they would be loyal to the Sultan alone.
And the practice of collecting these Christian boys was called the Devstrom system, and it essentially gave the Sultan the right to go in and to inspect all the Christian boys from a certain village and to essentially pick them over and deem which ones were well-behaved enough and untrained in any sort of combat and handsome enough and desirable enough for him to want to essentially have living in his palace under him one day.
Yeah, and these were really fascinating things that would go on. The officials would be sent into these conquered territories. Right now we'd know them as Greece, Austria, Albania, Bulgaria, Hungary, all these places, and the officials would go in and to these villages there, and they would tell the fathers to bring out their sons of the right age and bring out the baptism certificates to make sure they fit some of this criteria. For instance, they couldn't be orphans, they couldn't be only sons, etc. And it's estimated that about 1 in 40 families in a village had to sacrifice a boy to the Janissary Corps.
And once the boy was selected, they'd be taken to Istanbul, and for 3 to 7 years, they would undergo rigorous training. First, they would learn Turkish, and then they'd be schooled in combat. And depending on the type of talent they showed and their potential, they'd be put on different paths. So some went directly to labor in the fields or to serve as assistants to different government officials. And then there were some who were deemed intelligent enough to be schooled in academic subjects such as math, law, theology, and horsemanship, and military strategy. And these were going to be the really, really great elite soldiers.
Yeah, so you really aspired, if you were a Janissary, you really aspired to be a part of the standing army at the Sultan's palace. And that's where these people on the highest, these soldiers on the highest track would end up going. And I think the most prominent one would actually be a personal servant of the Sultan. And they basically had such great prospects ahead of them. Once they proved themselves, they could go on to have administrative posts and have so much power involved, even though they were always technically slaves and personal slaves of the Sultan. They were able to attain amazing amounts of power.
And to sort of give you a visual image, they wore pretty elaborate uniforms, too. They had fancy hats and really ornately embroidered cloaks, and I think that the Sultan gave each boy a particular cloak, or there was some unique aspect to each of their attire.
Mm-hmm.
And they were celibate. They couldn't marry, at least until the 16th century. The rules changed a little bit
there. That was a big issue, and
And they were upheld to very, very rigorous standards. They had to follow all the rules, and if they broke any of them, there was what to pay.
The case is like they would be whipped with a thin cane on the soles of their feet. That was one punishment for disobeying rules and training.
So historians suspect that over the course of history and over the course of the different sultans, nearly 5 million Christian boys were taken from their homes to become Janissaries.
It's an astounding figure when you think about it.
It really is. And it's very problematic for us today with our contemporary mindsets looking at this idea of a foreign force coming in and kidnapping essentially, I guess that's a debatable term to use, but taking children from their homes and repurposing them into slavery. But the term slavery is used sort of loosely in the Ottoman Empire, and the idea of a slave was comparable to that of a servant, and it was considered more prestigious than that of a subject. So if you were the Sultan's slave or the Sultan's servant, you had a higher regard in society than his subject.
Yeah, and this had to do with the idea that they had so many prospects ahead of them as a Janissary. Like I mentioned, they got a lot of power. There was at least one situation where someone rose from the ranks. He was originally taken in through the Devshirm system as a boy and kidnapped, and he rose to the ranks to the Grand Vizier, which basically means the chief minister. I think it's one of the highest positions you could get aside from all-out Sultan. So it's just astounding to think that this technical slave was like second in command in this empire.
And to put it in another type of perspective, the Ottoman Empire was able to grow and flourish because it kept expanding its lands. It was sort of like a house of cards empire. It's, if you can say, a business model. The business model of the empire was entirely based on the fact that it had to keep growing in order to thrive. And once it stopped growing, the empire collapsed. Sounds like a Ponzi scheme. Jane's giving me this look. I know exactly what she's thinking. And the reason that it had to keep growing was because when it went into a territory, it would use up all of the resources there and all of the people, virtually drain everything to the ground. And so if you look at the territories that have been conquered and filled with Christian people, if the Ottomans were coming in and depleting their resources and working the people to their bones, they had children, what could they really provide them with? You know, except life in stasis, life in these poor conditions. So for many Christian families, the idea of giving up their child to the Sultan for a life in the palace and perhaps a very high administrative position was a much better trade-off than living in poverty.
Yeah, so while at first you have the situation where some Christian parents are trying to buy their children out of the system and trying to switch out. I read about a situation where Christian parents would try to switch out their child for someone else's early on when the system was first starting. And then much later, when they saw the prospects that these kids would have, they would actually try to bribe the officials into taking their child into the system. Even, I guess these must not have been extremely devout Christians, because even though they had to be converted to Islam, these parents were willing to get their kids out of the penury in which they lived.
And according to some historical accounts, there were some Muslim families that were trying to get the Sultan to take their kids.
Yeah, and that's understandable. I mean, if you're a Muslim and you see all these Christian kids getting all these these opportunities, and you're like, why can't I get that for my child?
And that was forbidden. No Muslim children had that opportunity. Mm. But a question that I had for Jane when she originally wrote this article about the Janissaries was, What did the Janissaries themselves think of their lives? I mean, their parents were vying for them to become slaves in many instances, and many people wanted into this system. But once they were there, what did they think of their life?
Well, I don't know. I mean, that's a good question, but you'd think because of all their prestige and, you know, how they showed themselves off with their nice clothes and everything, it seemed like you would have a pretty sweet life and you would appreciate it. That's the impression that I got from Janissaries.
And then along in 1826 came the auspicious incident.
Yeah, this was a major problem that the power sort of went to their head a lot. All throughout their history, Janissaries would revolt, and they tried to get more power than they had, often like to get reform or to just get a more of a say into who became Sultan. Yeah, in the 19th century, 1826, like you said, they revolted again, and this time it was disaster.
Yeah, the Sultan was none too happy. He essentially dissolved the Janissary Corps, and to quell the rebels, he fired cannons at them, and most of them actually died. It's pretty tragic.
Yeah, and yeah, those who didn't die were fleeing from the carnage, so it was I'm not sure why it's called the auspicious incident, but but yeah, it's pretty nasty.
Maybe the Janissaries had a really good sense of irony.
Yeah, I guess
I'm not sure. But that in itself, if there's not a lot of information about how the Janissaries felt really about being Janissaries, I think that the auspicious incident would indicate that certainly they were pretty fed up with their conditions. And it's important to note too that the Sultan, the office of Sultan or the idea of Sultan had really evolved throughout the Ottoman Empire. And at first there was strict adherence to codes, and the Sultan was not a figure to be messed with. He was very well regarded in public society. But as the empire stretched on, the Sultan became less concerned about what people thought about him, so he became a little bit less popular. I think that the rules were relaxed, and there was some unrest brewing. And there were other cultures around the world who were looking at Turkey and Istanbul, and they started calling Turkey the sick man of Europe. And this is when the term Oriental, which we consider now a disparaging term, and even back then it was a disparaging term too, but this is when it came into conversation, I guess, about what was going on in the Ottoman Empire. And they were seen as revelers, people who engaged in far too much debauchery. It was associated with the harem and this really sort of strange and lazy lifestyle. And the Janissaries, it was almost like an institution of decadence. They'd once been really great soldiers and high regard under the Sultan, and who wouldn't want to be in service to the Sultan? But as the Sultan became less popular, and they were serving this man who was sort of despised by other countries and other cultures, I guess there wasn't that sense of pride and honor anymore.
Yeah, and it's such a fascinating situation, just thinking about how they have this, you'd think, very contrary terms. It seems like an oxymoron to be, you know, a slave soldier in this elite, very elite, powerful corps. And I should mention, when I first got this assignment, it was pretty funny because a couple weeks beforehand, our colleague Molly Edmonds, you might know from the Stuff Your Mom Never Told You podcast, she actually was coming up with nicknames for everyone around the office out of the dictionary, and she ran across Janissaries, and that became my nickname. And then a couple weeks later, I had to write about them, so I had to mention that.
Does she still call you Janissaries?
Well, yeah, she does.
Oh, we'll have to talk about that later. Meanwhile, if you like the podcast, you will love our new Stuff You Missed in History Class blog.
Yeah, Candace and I both run this blog once a day, and we write about history in the news and relevant stuff that interests us and we think will interest you too.
So be sure when you come to the website to look at this article that Jane has written about why people were vying to become slaves in the Ottoman Empire, that you also check out the blog on howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
Looking to part ways with complicated, expensive, and uncertain shipping? Then give your business the edge it needs with USPS Ground Advantage shipping from the United States Postal Service. Keep everything simple with clear upfront pricing and no unexpected surcharges. Keep things affordable with some of the lowest prices out there. And keep it all reliable with on-time ground shipments. It's time to turn shipping to your advantage. Learn how at USPS.com/advantage. USPS Ground Advantage. Simple, affordable, reliable.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
With the new Dexcom G7, you can achieve better diabetes results without painful finger sticks. It sends your glucose numbers to your compatible phone or watch so you can always see where you are and where you're heading. See how food and exercise affects your glucose, making it easier to spend more time in range and lower your A1C. Take more control of your diabetes with the number one recommended CGM brand. It's easy to get started today at Dexcom.com. That's Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com/compatibility.